Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, of course, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. I do hope, if you're not already, you'll hit that subscribe button to keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. You get a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, three a week, to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover some new ones. Of course, you can grab us anywhere you get podcasts from, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review if you feel so inspired. We've had some fantastic guests on lately that include Tammy Stronach. You know her as a childlike empress from The NeverEnding Story. She's back in a movie called Man and Witch, her first movie in 40 years since The NeverEnding Story. We also talk with Victoria Justice, Minnie Driver, who's starring in The Serpent Queen on Stars. Revisited a couple of interviews from the late Chris Cornell of Soundgarden. Mark from Ride was here. Chloe Coleman, she's starring in My Spy, The Eternal City. Ashton Irwin of 5 Seconds of Summer. Sabrina Carpenter, the band Travis. Kylie Cantrell, she's starring in Descendants 4. Eels, 21 Pilots. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, we are rewinding back to a trio of interviews with Juliana Hatfield. These interviews took place 3 years in a row, 2017, 2018, and 2019. We start in 2017 with the Pussycat album, which was written in the wake of the 2016 election, as well as her memories from the beginnings of her solo career. Part two then comes from 2018, when Juliana paid tribute to Olivia Newton-John with a tribute album and celebrated the 25th anniversary of her debut solo record. And we wrap up with a 2019 interview behind the album Weird. We also talk about meeting Liz Phair for the first time and looking back at her contributions to Reality Bites and My So-Called Life. You get all that and more. Rewind episode. It's Kyle Meredith with Juliana Hatfield.
I know it's a story that you're probably telling a lot right now, but the story of this album is notable because of where it came from and why.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it took me by surprise because I had been feeling very uninspired for quite a while, and just I felt like I had nothing to say, nothing to write about, and I was wondering if I would ever feel the desire to write a song ever again. And then the presidential election started happening. All that stuff, the run-up to the election, and then the election, and then I just suddenly had a whole lot that I wanted to write about. And so the album was very much inspired by current events and just the situation and how people are feeling. And the writing and the recording all happened very fast, and it was almost as if I was not even fully conscious of it. I was being pulled along by this creative force, and yeah, it was just something that I was compelled to do, and it took me by surprise, and I guess that's what happens sometimes.
You know, it's interesting, though, as I'm talking to a lot of artists who are writing about similar themes, it's you almost have an advantage of on them, though, about the directness of these songs, because most of them were writing from the point of view of what if this happens. And I'm finding a lot of artists that, you know, they started writing the record at the beginning of 2016 or whatever, when it was just like a, what if this happens? What would it look like? And suddenly their songs sort of take on a change. But you had the unfortunate luxury of being very fresh about it all.
Yeah. I mean, I was a little worried about it, actually, because that part of the urgency I felt about recording it and having it released was I was afraid that by the time the album was released, the subject matter would be not relevant anymore, because everything changes so fast. And I thought maybe the songs would be obsolete already by the time the record came out. Like, you know, there's a song called Kellyanne, and maybe by the time anyone heard the song, Kellyanne would have been fired, you know, like, who knows. Mm-hmm. So I tried not to use too many specific details about, you know, factual details. I did use the name Kellyanne, but I think that the song, there's a history of songs with whose titles are female names. Just tons and tons of them. And I thought that the song could fit into that tradition of a song about, a complicated song about a woman, you know, complicated feelings about a woman. And so, I was thinking ahead, like, in case Kellyanne disappears off the scene, like Katrina Pearson, remember her?
No.
The former spokeswoman. See, she disappeared. She was a spokesman for Trump, like, a while ago, and she kind of disappeared. And so I was aware that Kellyanne could also disappear, but I wanted my song to still be enjoyable. So,
you know, with all due respect, I sort of wish that your songs had become irrelevant.
I mean, I really think that the album is just grappling with a lot of confusion and anger, and I think that the issues are going to continue to be problems. The issues that I'm grappling with are going, and the issues and the feelings are going to continue to be problems into the future. So,
yeah.
I think, unfortunately, I think that the issues on the record are going to be relevant until the end of the world. Issues like sexism and stuff like that.
I did, when I was reading the press release on it, I and the way you kind of explain your songs in the same way you're doing there, it's like you were going through the seven stages of grief. You know?
Yeah, I mean, the whole situation has forced me to accept the realities. I'm at the acceptance stage. I'm accepting the fact that certain things like sexism and racism are here to stay. That's what this election has made clear, that sexism, racism, et cetera, are so entrenched, ingrained, and endemic in this culture. And that became really clear last year and this year. And so I think that's what I've really come to terms with.
Yeah, which is horrible when you think about that. I mean, and I'll use the seg here to bring up even just the title of Impossible Song. You know, that was the first single here. And there is those times where it does feel completely impossible that you could see the, you know, schism that's out there being able to be, you know, stitched together in some way.
Yeah, it does feel like the country is more divided than ever. I mean, it just seems that way. I don't know if it's true. I haven't been alive forever, but I also do think, I mean, the extremes are just becoming more clear. You know, the gaps are widening. And the feelings are getting stronger from each side, and so in a way that's good, because you see something like the Women's March that happened, which was like one of the largest, if not the largest ever march on Washington. That's a good thing, you mm-hmm. know. And people are very energized and motivated and mobilizing, and that's good for people to be waking up is a good thing. And I also do believe that, I mean, the Impossible Song is kind of a fantasy. Fantasy that people will, you know, be able to tone down their rage and just like step back and find things in common. I do think that when it really matters in crucial crisis moments, people can do the right thing no matter what side they're on. And I talk about it in, I think I explained the song somewhere, the Impossible Song somewhere, and it's the idea that, you know, like we all of us we all might have to rely on the kindness of a stranger at some point. Like if something happens, like if I fall down in the middle of the street and I can't get up and there's a car coming, hopefully someone will see and come and grab me and pull me out of the road. And it won't matter if that person loves Trump or hates Trump, and it won't matter if I love Trump or hate Trump. You know, I think that there are moments where our common humanity has to take precedence over anything else.
Yeah.
And I believe that it can and does, but still there's a lot of stuff that's really bad right now.
Yeah. And we've been there before, you know. I think we, in some ways, we've been here before, and I think we have gotten to that point. But when you're in the thick of it, you know, forest for the trees scenario, it's a bit daunting, I guess.
Yeah.
So, hopeful. There are definitely more direct songs, and we'll talk about, you know, the anger side of things, as I've only heard the trio of singles that are out there. But Short Finger Man, you've done this great job of writing just a great sing-along, if you want. You know, that becomes very directed. And by the way, the video is mesmerizing, the way it's edited. It's completely mesmerizing.
Oh, thanks. I shot all that stuff myself, and then I sent all this footage to Caroline Jakes in New York, and I know she's a really good young editor, and I knew that like editing is what she likes to do, and she just did such a good job. She constructed a narrative out of all of my random footage, and she did a great job, I think.
I don't know if it's outside of the politics, but there was one spot in an interview or in the press release that you said this is also a personal record. And I sort of got curious about your use of that word, if you were alluding to something else that was not exactly political, or it was more, you know, the old action movie line of now it's personal.
The songs are really about my feelings. I'm trying to deal with my rage and my confusion and my disgust and my little glimmers of hopefulness and, you know, all that stuff. It is personal. It's my reactions and my discomfort, you know, my discomfort with my own reactions and trying not to be reactionary and trying to deal with the anxiety of looking at the news and stuff. And so it is really all about me in a way, if you want to look at it like that. And just the things going on in the country and the culture have forced me and a lot of other people to have to deal with things in our own pasts. Like when the Pussy Grab leaked tapes came out, remember that?
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
The Pussy Grab, the Trump talking about, joking about grabbing a woman in the pussy, that really was a defining moment in my life, I think. And I think probably a lot of other women's lives. And it just, all this stuff from my past, back to my childhood, up through the present day, came rushing back up to my consciousness. Some of it even, maybe for the first time, realizing a lifetime of dealing with shit like that. I don't want to equate sexism with racism because they're different, but, you know, black people have to deal with racism every day of their lives. Women have to deal with sexism every day of their lives. They're different, but there are similarities. And I always kind of ignored it. I was very stoic about it, like, whatever, I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to get on with it, do my job. But when that happened, when the man who was about to become the most powerful man in the country was saying these things, it just became really clear that it just became so clear how pervasive sexism and misogyny truly are. And that changed me somehow, having to confront that reality really consciously. I've always written about it. I've always, from Dame with a Rod on my first Atlantic album, and I've always had protest songs and anti-sexism songs, anti-abuse, anti-emotional abuse. I've always been writing about it, but only half consciously. And now I think I'm just like finally fully conscious about the realities of things.
And I guess that's what I go back to something you said earlier about, you know, that you expect that it will always be there. But at the same time, now that it's so much in the conversation, you know, there's got to be some hope that does push everything in a more positive, that, you know, if more people are talking about it. Yeah.
It could also just push it in a more violent direction because people are more conscious and less willing to let it happen.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the Trump, the election. The campaign and the election has empowered a lot of hateful people to release their hate publicly and proudly, and that is frightening. But no, maybe it also will lead to more people fighting against hatred and lies. And yeah, it's just, who knows what will come from this. It's frightening, but it's also kind of interesting to see, you know, changes or what changes will happen.
Yeah.
Now, from now.
Well, you know, all of these things going into this record, I know it's, I don't know, it's the freedom of letting these songs arrive as they are so quick. You know, I know a lot of artists don't really take the chance, and you've talked about being a little bit frightened that it came so fast and it was out there, but it does put such a specific time stamp on them. But I've got to applaud you on the way you've made them. I mean, even if it did all go away tomorrow, I think these songs would still, you know, have a purpose and a relevance, and would still sound great too.
Thanks. I hope so. I hope they're not totally irrelevant. I don't think they will be. I think they'll still have, I mean, like I said, I have a long history of throwing protest songs in among my albums. People might not notice, but this is just, this album just has more protest songs than my other albums do, I think.
And I'll, you know, outside of that, I'll also say, is it possible that your voice has not changed in 25 or 30 years?
Oh, don't say that. I hope it has. I mean, you can go back and listen to the Blake Babies. My voice has definitely gotten a little bit lower, I think. Yeah. A little bit.
Just a little bit, though. I mean, it's
a little.
It's still so, I don't know, I don't know the word for it, but it, you have a very smooth
voice. Well, it's because I have a clear, you know why? It's because I have a clear conscience. And I live, it's also clean living. You know, I've never been into drugs or drinking a lot. So I think that maybe that helps. I don't know. Maybe it's just genetic. I try to live a clean, healthy life and have a clear conscience and not have secrets and lies in my life.
Well, it's worked. You still sound fantastic.
Thank you. I'm tired now. You can hear my voice. It's like, morning. I have a morning voice right now.
Yeah, I brought that up, and someone published that. I think it was Diffuser. They, you know, the 25th anniversary of going solo. Had you even realized that? Because I thought I saw a tweet that it sounded like you hadn't even paid attention.
No. I mean, I lose track of time. I don't keep track of my history I always hated history in school. Dates. I don't keep track of dates I can't even tell you how many albums I've made. I lost track of that. And there are so many side projects and collaborations, I really can't even count the albums at this point. I'm not really an anniversary marker. I'm not an anniversary celebrator. I don't really care about that stuff. And it just surprises me, though, when I realize how fast time goes. It's kind of shocking.
Yeah. Well, somebody out there is keeping track for us all, so.
That's good. Yeah, there are archivists out there who do that work for me without my knowing it.
Well, Juliana, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you today, and I'm so excited about this record, at least for the sound of it and the fun songs, you know, aside from the content, but I do love it. So thank you so much for talking.
Well, thanks for talking to me.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Juliana Hatfield.
Hi, Kyle. It's Juliana.
Well, first off, so you announced this Olivia Newton-John record a few months ago, whatever it is, and I think I might have squeaked a little bit just the anticipation of what this might sound like, and now that I've heard it, it's everything that I ever could have dreamed for. So thank you for this.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. I mean, because I knew that I liked what I had done, but I had a little twinge of worry that some of her hardcore fans might be really sensitive about it, you know, and I didn't want to make anyone think that I was disrespecting her or the originals in any way, because it was just like a totally sincere love of her that made me want to do this.
Well, I'd also read that, though, you know, last time you and I talked was behind the Pussycat record, which was a very heavy record lyrically and ideologically. And I heard that this was sort of also used as an escape from all of that. Is that right?
It wasn't consciously done as a reaction to Pussycat, but I think it was a reaction to all the just anger and negativity that I had I had been feeling when I was creating Pussycat. I think I just naturally gravitated toward something, well, something that's more beautiful and positive, which is how I think of Olivia Newton-John and her music. And just, it was just like a complete pendulum swing away from the ideas on Pussycat. What, not consciously, it just kind of happened, and just an escape to someplace that's nicer than the real world right now.
I mean, it was sort of a random, it was almost could have been maybe the most random artist, you know, you've ever could have picked, for the fans at least. I mean, we don't know your personal life, obviously, so we couldn't have seen that coming. But I mean, Olivia has these great songs. She was never really considered one of the cool kids, I guess you could say, but her music is classic. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't have any guilty pleasures in my life. I don't feel embarrassed about anything in terms of the music that I listen to. And I've always proudly loved Olivia Newton-John, and I talk about her. Someone sent me an interview from an old interview I did from like 1996, and I talk about how much I love Olivia Newton-John in that interview.
Oh, wow.
In 1996. She's definitely not appreciated by everyone. Like, she's probably not a hipster's favorite artist, but I never care about being cool, you know. Maybe that's why I like her so much, is because I don't think that I'm cool, and I don't think that a lot of people think I'm cool, and you know, some people don't think she's cool. So I feel an affinity or something with her.
You're all cool in my book. That's an easy setup for me there. So my little story of Olivia Newton-John is, I was born in 1981. I'm 36. And mm-hmm. Physical was the number one song when I was born. And a lot of people, we look back and we, you know, especially us music geeks, was like, oh, what was the big song when you came out or whatever? I've always had this connection to that song.
You don't remember it, though, because you were just born.
I don't remember it. No, but knowing that it was in the world and in the air at the same time that I was breathing the new air, it's been sort of a cool thing for me.
Well, you know, I was born in the summer of love, and I'm sure there was tons of great music around then. But I don't know. I was more of a 70s. I was a 70s child, and so all my favorite music is probably in the 70s. A lot of it. I feel very nostalgic for that era.
Yeah.
When I was a child.
Well, especially, I mean, we look at our coming of age years, you know, for whatever years those really hit you, and for a lot of us, that's what we look back on. It just so happens a lot of your music falls into my coming of age years.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you know, that's why I've always had that connection with all of your records too. So there's, you know, the little likeness there. I want to thank you. I was not familiar with the song Totally Hot. That's my new favorite song.
Oh, have you heard Olivia Newton-John's version?
Yeah, I went back and listened to it.
Very different.
Yeah, it's very different. I love your version.
Thanks. Yeah, that's one of the ones that we've reinterpreted a lot. We changed it a lot in terms of the feel and the delivery. Her version's more kind of white funky, and we made it like, well, my idea was to do it like the Faces kind of groove, and I don't know if it really turned out like that, but it's definitely more like sloppy and sleazy than her version.
I love it. It's like I said, it's my new favorite song right now. I can't get enough of it. When you're covering someone so closely like this, is there a chance to learn more about their art? It seems like it would be like a more intimate education.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, just in terms of the mechanics and the technical stuff, I have a new appreciation for her voice as an instrument. Because although I'd always sung along to her stuff, you know, at home and in the car and in the shower probably, when trying to do it in the studio at full voice and to try to really nail the melodies, it was really challenging. And I really could appreciate just physically how much work she's doing with her voice. And also the songwriting is really impressive. A lot of the stuff is just challenging was the word in the studio, just trying to get it all together. Some of the songs had a lot of chords in them, and some really complicated chords with interesting voicings. And there's a lot of craft and skill in those songs.
Yeah, I was listening to, I think it's Magic. Sounds like it would be one of those songs that would have been a little bit harder to pull off.
Yeah, it was tough trying to figure out how to play a lot of the voicings, and a lot of the songs have multiple keyboard parts and multiple just a lot of tracks going on in the brew of each song, and there was a lot of really intense close listening that I did to try and pick out all the parts and to try and decide what I wanted to play and what I wanted to leave out and what I wanted to reimagine. It was like a humongous jigsaw puzzle.
We should point out too, proceeds to this, you're donating some of the proceeds to the Cancer Wellness Center, right?
Yeah, a dollar from each album sale. I'm not sure how that's going to work out with if people buy individual tracks, but a portion of every sale is going to go to the Olivia Newton-John Cancer Center. Yeah, which helps people with research and with their wellness in dealing with their illness. Yeah. You know, it's Wellness and Research Center for Cancer in Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah, and I know any time's a good time to help out a cause like that, but it's especially well-timed because she just went through her own battle, right?
Yeah, she had a recurrence. She had breast cancer more than 20 years ago. I'm not sure, but she had breast cancer then, and then she was in remission for a long time, and then it came back recently, or last year, and that's when I decided to make this album, when I heard that I had tickets to see her play a concert and it was canceled because she was dealing with her health issues. And that was when I thought of making an album.
Now, I saw that that she did a post on it, had heard it. Have you been able to talk to her about the record yet? Have you met her?
No, I haven't made actual contact, but it's just been great to hear from her and just the fact that the center in Melbourne was into us doing it, and you know, like associating the thing with the cancer center was really nice of them to get involved, you know, to let us be involved.
And the other interesting part of all this too, I think I read that Paul Westerberg did the art.
Well, he did a drawing that we used for the cover of a 7-inch.
Oh, okay.
Which, not the album, but it's a 7-inch which has two other Olivia Newton-John songs, two songs that are not on the album.
Plenty of extra reason to get that then as a nice add-on. I love that collaboration you guys did. I should bring that up while we're here.
I Don't Care. I was just listening to the I Don't Care today.
That was great. Is there ever a chance that you guys are going to ever do that again? Was this just a one-off?
We might do it again. It's something that we talk about doing.
Yeah.
So I would definitely say that door is open.
The other big release you've got going on, I'll bring up, is the 25th anniversary. Was it 25th anniversary of Hey Babe? Is that what
That's
it is?
That's what they tell me.
Yeah.
They say. I don't know. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Have you had to go back and listen to it yourself? Did you put an ear on it?
I did. I don't often go back and listen to my old stuff, but I was really pleasantly surprised. I was proud for the first time I felt proud of it. Yeah. And I think it's a really good document of a time and a place in my brain and heart and soul at the time. It's a good documentation of a lot of friends, people I was hanging around with and making music with. There's a lot of guest friends on the album, playing on that album, like lots of people.
I noticed I was talking, so I had Tanya Donnelly on the show the other day, you know, and Belly are back together and everything. And I was like, you know, it's an amazing time right now because, like, that scene to me was I'll call it the Boston scene or whatever, was one of the coolest things that, you know, sort of came out of the 90s. And it's all happening again with all the same names and all the music is just as good.
Yeah, I guess it's something about, like, I don't know. I think people are just feeling like the world's going to end, so we might as well get out there and have some fun before it ends. You know, like, last splash, that's funny, I'm using it. Referencing the Breeders in the back. Yeah, I don't know, or maybe it's like an age thing, maybe it's like after 25 years, you kind of reassess your legacy and makes people kind of think about, you know, like, did we really get it done right? Do we want to try it again? Do we have anything more to say? And I think that if you're a creative person, and you have a compulsion to make art work, I don't think it's an impulse or a compulsion that really goes away. I think that we always want to be making stuff for people to hear or to read or whatever it is. I think it's just like, it's an ongoing concern. It doesn't stop.
Well, I, you know, one of the nice things, I guess, of having it just be your name, you know, instead of a band name, is you don't really have to think about, you know, the whole reuniting thing all the time. I'm sure that, you know, it's like you're just you. You're always putting out the music, so that's...
although the Blake Babies, my old band, have done a few shows in the past couple of years. We did last, I think in November, we did 3 shows with Letters to Cleo, which is another band mm-hmm. that was coming back and doing some stuff after a long hiatus.
Well, I love hearing all the music, but, you know, I'm always such a fan of when you put something out, and this is right up there. The cool thing about this Olivia Newton-John record, they are her songs, they are her classics, but the way you've done them in another universe, this could have easily been your record. You know, when I listened to it, I was like, this is a Julianna Hetfield record, and that's
awesome.
Well,
thank you. That's a good compliment. That makes me feel good, because I do want to make the songs my own when I'm playing and singing them, and I don't just want to pretend that I'm somebody else, or I don't want to just pay homage. I want to actually get inside the songs and live inside of them and become them, or you know, I kind of found myself in the songs. That's what it felt like, and it was very, although it was a complicated jigsaw puzzle, it also felt natural when I started to really get my hands around the meat and the bones of the songs. It started to feel just like very, very natural to play them and sing them.
Well, I hope I get to catch a few of them live too. Like I said, I think it'll be a lot of fun to hear these kind of spread out throughout the sets.
Yeah, I've done a couple of low-key shows with a mostly new bunch of people, and it's been really interesting to play them live, really kind of fun.
Well, thank you for the music, Julianna, or as I see from the Twitter, I should call you Julianne, I think.
Julianne, yeah, someone at the barista called me Julianne, and it sounded so pretty. I want to change my name to Julianne.
Julianne Hetfield. It's not a huge jump, you know?
It's not.
If you say it enough times, everybody will think, no, that's what it always was, right? And you can confuse them into the right direction.
People are always misspelling my name anyway, so some people won't even notice the change.
Well, thank you so much again for the music and for taking the time to talk today.
Thanks, Kyle.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Julianna Hetfield.
Hi, Kyle.
Before I get too deep into this, you know, this is our third time talking in 3 years. And of course, we caught up last time about the Olivia Newton-John covers record. I wore that out all through the year. That ended up being one of my all-time favorites of 2018. So still playing around our house anyway.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, does this seem like you've been busier than usual? Or is it just because there was a covers record thrown in that sort of gives it that perception?
I don't feel... It's funny. I still feel like I'm kind of lazy. I feel like... I mean, you know, I completed the new album, Weird. I completed it, I don't know when, like a couple of months ago or something. And I haven't written a song since then. So I feel like, why haven't I written another album yet? You know, I think I'm always really pretty prolific, at least compared to what other songwriters say they are like. So, yeah, I don't feel like I've been more busy than usual, because usually I'm working on something, even if it's something that is never released. Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question at all. My brain is only at sort of like half capacity working right now.
You did, because once you said that, it sort of dawned on me. I mean, I think I remember reading at some point down the line, I mean, you've released like well over 20 records, and especially well over 20 records when you count the collaborations and everything else. So that's
yeah, I like to keep busy. I feel like this is my work, and people with jobs that are not in the arts, they don't get to take months off. You know, why should I get to take months off? Right. I feel like I should always be working, even if it's just writing or practicing my instruments. You know, I like to keep doing my work, even if it's behind the scenes, because that's what I do. It's my work.
Well, as a fellow obsessive, I completely respect that. And as a fan, it just means I get more music all the time. So I'm completely happy with that.
Yeah. I mean, and also I have the freedom to be able to release 2 records in a year, because Joe at American Laundromat Records is very amenable to my fast pace of putting out, what's that word, spewing out records. I can spew it out, and he can get it. He can turn them around really fast, which I like.
Well, with Weird, then, let's get into the new record here, because I don't know, if songwriting, you know, it's usually a reflection of the writer, at least in some way. I mean, even if you're doing a character study, but it seems like, and and I'll see if I'm on the right track here. It does seem like you're taking a more direct look than usual. And I'll back up to the Pussycat record, which had you kind of going back to your childhood in certain parts. And it almost feels like this record is like how you came to be who you are. Like this is, I don't know, is that close?
I think it is. It's really being honest about who I am. And it's just the idea is that maybe I'm finally accepting who I am and I'm not fighting it so much. And whereas a lot of my earlier music is about me fighting who I am and trying to pushing against my instincts, and now I'm kind of just accepting it, I think.
I mean, it also sounds like the album is a bit of a love letter in a skewed sort of way, you know, a love letter to four walls, I guess.
Yeah, and my original concept was that I was going to make an album, how there are a lot of rock songs about freedom, like Free Bird, literally, I'm Free Bird, and You Can't Tie Me Down, Baby, and, you know, I'm going to, all those songs about just, like, traveling in Rome, mm-hmm. you know, all those songs, but I wanted this album originally, it was going to be the opposite of that, and it was about the comfort of being in the comfort of living in a very small radius of a few blocks, like living in a small apartment and venturing out only to ever travel the same few block radius, and how that doesn't have to be a bad thing, but I wanted to explore the wonders of that kind of isolation and the freedom of it, actually, because it's like free, you know, you hear people talk about freedom, and there when your choices are limited, that is kind of freedom, because you have to come up with clever ways of working within confines. And having too many choices, it can be overwhelming.
I mean, it's an album that's specifically personal, but completely relatable. Like, I get every bit of that.
Well, I think it's probably relatable to some people, but some people might not find it so relatable. I mean, there are people who might not understand the joys of solitude. And, you know, making, you know, I make the choice to be alone when I don't have to be. And I'm sure there's lots of people who wouldn't understand that, making the choice to be alone rather than the alternative.
I mean, I'm married, so that part doesn't exactly relate to me. But at the same time, I choose to do 99% of my interviews over the phone because of something version of that, you know?
Yeah. I have a thing about, I don't know how you could diagnose this thing that I have. It's like some kind of, it's like I can almost only use one sense at a time. And it's like when I'm in the studio and I'm listening back to something I've recorded, I find myself involuntarily putting a hand over my eyes because I can hear better when my eyes are blocked. So it's like that with any kind of social interaction. I find it distracting. It distracts me from a conversation if I'm looking at someone's face. Mm-hmm. It can really be discombobulating. So in that way, I totally understand you're wanting to do interviews over the phone. Because right now I'm just utilizing my hearing sense.
You, a second ago, you know, you're talking about it sort of, you know, coming to peace with you know, yourself and this type of freedom. Did you find, I don't know which direction it came from, like, did the album help you realize that, or did you realize that and say, I would like to write about that?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe it was both. I don't know. I think it's just the process, getting comfortable with, as someone who came from a kind of a dysfunctional background and struggled a lot with emotional problems, I think that it's just the process of becoming comfortable with what and who I am. You know, it's taken me a long time to get to the place where I can accept who I am with all of my quirks and my emotional disabilities. That's what I call them. I mean, everyone has them, uh-huh. I assume. Yeah, it's hard because there's just a lot of... It's hard to accept certain things about oneself. But once you do, if you can accept them, it can make life a lot better. And I'm finding that life just is getting better because I'm not fighting against who I am so much.
you know, if not everybody can relate to the lyrics, I do believe that, well, at least I could say for the folks who can't relate to the lyrics, they can at least relate to the music on here, because, you know, I do want to compliment you on that side as well. Like, I'm drawn to All Right Yeah. That's one of my favorites instantly off of it. It feels like it's an anthem for people who aren't very anthemic themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really simple song. I mean, the origins of it was about a heat wave. It was really hot last summer and humid here in Boston, and I was miserable. I don't like the summer to begin with, but when it gets really humid and hot, it makes me insane. It was agonizing. And so I was trying, while I was waiting out this heat wave, waiting for it to break and let up, I was working on the song, and I was trying to make something good out of it, you know, like trying to be positive, thinking this wave is going to break. I'm just, you know, I'm going to dance around. I'm sweating. I'm just like, I'm dealing with it. So, yeah.
But I'll flip that. You know, the opposite side of that is a track like Broken Doll, which, you know, that does seem like the anthem for any of us, you know, for all of us, because, you know, God knows what we all think when we, I don't know, look into a mirror or you take a second to evaluate ourselves. I don't think there's a person on the planet other than a few extremely narcissistic people, you know, who don't think those things.
You know, as a woman whose image has been captured a lot in photographs and videos, I have had to grapple with the issue of image. You know, what am I projecting? What are people picking up from these images that I put out? And I've always been really conflicted about image. You know, I never really knew what I wanted to present to people. I just wanted to be myself, and I wanted to be simple and honest, but it never really came across that the way I wanted it to. And so I just think about other people in the public eye and the images, women and the images they project, and the way a lot of them present their sort of like most groomed selves, and they get all dolled up and, you know, lots of paint and hairspray. And I was just kind of thinking about that stuff. And then comparing myself to that, I feel like I'm not a Barbie doll. I don't look perfect like a Barbie doll. I'm a broken doll. That's how I feel, and I'm okay with it, you know, because I always wanted to project a true image of myself, which is a little bit rumpled and imperfect. And also, but after I wrote the song and recorded it, I realized that, oh, it's actually a song about aging. I was just trying to write about, you know, what it feels like, how I feel, what it feels like to be me, what I see in the mirror, but there are definitely parts of the song that are about things that happen to a body after a certain age, like the teeth start falling apart, you know, like your teeth, the teeth just go. And, you know, I've had a couple of root canals and I have a couple of crowns, and one of them wasn't put on right. And so when I brush my teeth, sometimes I'm spitting out blood. So I wrote about that. And then you get the hairs that start sprouting in weird places that never did before. Is this too real? Is this too much information? Can the people handle this?
Yeah. You know, the nice thing about this is this is not the type of lyrics that, you know, three quarters of songwriters will dare write about. One, because they're just too young, you know, and for a lot of folks, they, you know, they give up the dream by a certain point. So they never make it to the point where they can write about this, at least in a, you know, with a public platform or whatever. So it's, I think it's really great. And in a sense, you know, I don't want to, you know, paint too big of a with a too big of a brush here, but I think it's important that you're writing about this too.
My whole songwriting career has been about just writing about the truth as I see it, and so I'm going to continue to write about my truth. And I think, you know, getting to a different age, getting into a different age group, that opens up a whole realm of subject matter. You know, like the older I get, the more things I will experience that I did not experience when I was younger. So that, for me, that's just like more material to work with.
Right.
And I don't think, you know, there's a lot of music about youth, and at my age I shouldn't be writing songs about being 20 years old, because
right,
that wouldn't make sense. And I've never been a writer who does character studies, really. It's kind of all about me.
I want to take a sort of a sliver of a thread of something you said a minute ago, because when you were talking about the way image has handled, and I was thinking especially in the music industry, over your career. If I remember right, there was a time recently when you and Liz Phair were on stage together, and I feel like one of you all had said that was the first time you had ever met, because during your beginnings, like that, women were pitted against each other.
Yeah, Liz said that this was just a few months ago when we met. She was in town and she asked me to sing. We did Please Mr. Please together with her band during her show in Boston. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't believe that we had never met before, because we're the same age, we came up in the same scene, and we know a lot of the same people and have worked with a lot of the same people, and it was just kind of baffling that we had never met. But it's true that, that happened. I remember, I have a vague memory of the Primitives. Like, I remember hearing, there was some show that I was maybe going to play on the bill with the Primitives, but they didn't, someone from her camp didn't want me on the bill maybe it was the club didn't want me on the bill because there was already a woman singer, and like that kind of ridiculousness happened. It did. Yeah. It was like, it's still like, I'm sure playlists today, I've been hearing things about country radio in Nashville. Like they still have, I think they probably maybe still have quotas. Like you can only play a certain number of female artists in an hour. Like it's just, it's total bullshit. I think people, I don't know where they come up with these strategies, because I think people just want to hear good music.
No, I can speak for that.
It's just sexist, I think.
Oh, exactly. Absolutely. I mean, I'm very lucky to work at the type of radio station that I work at. You know, we're a non-commercial public radio station, technically AAA to get in the weeds of that one. But when I came in, which was over a decade ago, there were still rules in place from the folks who used to run the music here, where you couldn't play more than two or three women in a row. And I didn't understand that, because I don't know. It's because exactly everything you're saying is just stupid.
Who came up with those?
I don't know.
Rules? Was it market research or something?
Just sexist men. That's all it was. Because I instantly got rid of that rule, and now we can play 3 hours of women if you want, or a whole day, and no one has ever called. Never have they ever called to say, oh man, that's just too many. No, and our ratings have only gone up every single year. So
yeah, it's just sexism. It's silly. It's ridiculous, and it still lingers. You know, that stuff is still happening.
Well, see, on the positive side, not of that, but on the positive side of I think of you and Liz, having music out as you do these days, there is that whole new group of artists who are calling both of you as, some of their main influences. And we play a lot of them, and you can hear it. And it's just it's really cool to kind of hear that all come back around. And, these young artists, I say using that sound like they're stealing it in any way, but definitely, waving that flag, I guess.
Yeah, people have been saying that to me. I don't listen to a lot of music lately, but there's definitely things I want to check out that people have been telling me they're hearing me as an influence, and I guess I don't listen to enough music. I really should get better at that.
I don't think it's affected your songwriting, at least. And I say that again as a fan, so there's that.
Well, I think maybe I'm just trying to stay pure. When I'm writing, I don't want to be influenced by anything. I've written songs before, and I have these once in a while, and in the middle of a night, I'll wake up and I'll think, oh my God, did I hear that somewhere in my childhood? Did that melody come from something I heard before? I'll have these panics that maybe something that I thought was original, maybe it was came up bubbling up from my unconscious, like it was a melody from that someone I heard somewhere. But as far as I know, all of my songs are totally original.
I've never listened to one of your songs and thought it sounded like anything else, for what it's worth.
Okay, so. Good.
I hinted at the past right there. I do want to ask one question, and it's just because I end a lot of my interviews, talking about big round anniversaries. I'm a sort of fan of that. And while you don't have any actual albums that fit that category, it is the 25th anniversary of both soundtracks to Reality Bites and My So-Called Life. Two of the most 90s soundtracks of all time, which you happen to be a part of both of.
Oh, wow. I got a gold record for the Reality Bites soundtrack. I mean, it went gold at some point, and I badgered my manager. I'm like, hey, why don't I get one of those? I'm on that soundtrack. Get me a gold record, damn it. And so my manager made some calls, and they sent me one. you know, like a framed, because it's like my, I was going to say it's my only gold record, but actually I'm on the, I also badgered them to get me a gold record for the Lemonheads, It's a Shame About Ray.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That I played bass on. So I've never had a gold record of my own, but I'm involved in a couple of them.
Yeah.
I had a song on the Reality Bites soundtrack.
And it's a great song. I mean, Spin the Bottle is still, you know, it's one of my all-time favorites. I mean, that whole soundtrack, too.
And I don't even remember what's on it. What else is on it?
Well, so you had Squeeze, you know, they redid their Tempted. It was Tempted 94, and that was one of the big ones. And then Big Mountain did the cover of Baby, I Love Your Way, and Ethan Hawke, and of course, Lisa Loeb. That was her big breakthrough.
Right.
Yeah.
That was her big smash.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a good one. And you know, so is My So-Called Life. It's like I said, it's just, you just happen to be on two of the most quintessential 90s compilations I think I could have ever thought of. So it's,
yeah, totally, totally.
Both celebrating 25 years. Juliana, I always appreciate all the time you give me, and I definitely appreciate all the music that you keep making, and congratulations on Weird. It's another
fun
one.
Thank you very much, Kyle.
And there it is, a trio of interviews with Juliana. My thanks to Juliana Hatfield. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with every interview that we put out every single week, three a week, in fact, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give a rating and leave a review as well. After that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Rod Stewart, Johnny Cash, Everclear, Living Color, Spin Doctors, Sam Phillips, Katie Herzig, Sasami, Granddaddy, Elliott Smith, NXS, and my interview with Robin Wilson of the band Gem Blossoms. Again, just an example of what you can hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. And I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.